College football playoff rankings, NFL Week 10 recap, Carlos Correa is an ignorant dope, and Turkey Day football. The Valley Sports Talk begins right now. What's going on, everybody? Welcome into another edition of the LaValley Sports Talk Podcast, brought to you by the Soundline Network. As always, I'm your host, Chris LaValley. Hope you all are doing well and staying safe. Let's kick it off. Let's talk college football. Let's look at the new college football playoff rankings, which, for the most part, remain the same. So your top 10 teams in order are Georgia, Bama, Oregon, Ohio State, Cincinnati, Michigan, Michigan State, Notre Dame, Oklahoma State, and Wake Forest. The only two undefeated teams in the top 10 are Georgia, which is ranked number one, and Cincinnati, which is ranked fifth in the country. So your top four, so your playoff rankings right now. So the four playoff teams are Georgia, Bama, Oregon, and Ohio State. Cincinnati is still sitting out in the fifth spot. Michigan and Michigan State remain at 6 and 7, respectively. And really the only other major move up in the top 10 is Notre Dame sliding up a couple spots to eighth. And don't be shocked if the committee tries to find a way to get Notre Dame in the college football playoff. I'm smelling it right now. If Cincinnati falters, so if Cincinnati loses at all the rest of the way, don't be surprised if Notre Dame all of a sudden leapfrogs Michigan State and Michigan and ends up hovering right around the fifth spot. So then if Ohio State somehow slips up, Notre Dame slides right in. Which is a joke. I've told y'all before, Notre Dame never deserves to go back into the college football playoff because every time they go in, they get absolutely obliterated, and it's just an embarrassing watch. And it's a terrible watch. It's not a good. They never perform well on the big stage. They haven't in years. Notre Dame is completely overrated, and they have been for a very, very long time. So the way that it's looking right now, my assumption is that Georgia is definitely in. I mean, unless they slip up before the SEC title game, Georgia is definitely going to be in the playoff. Alabama, see, I'm split on this because there are some analysts who believe that Alabama could still get in if they lose to Georgia in the SEC title game. That would give Bama two losses. The argument is that if Bama gets blown out by Georgia or they lose by more than a touchdown, that the committee won't keep them in. But if Bama keeps it close, so it's within 7 points, that the argument will be Georgia has blown out every opponent that they've played thus far this season. Georgia is clearly the best team in college football, and Bama was able to hang around with them the entire game. They made it close. Therefore, Bama must be one of the top four teams in the country, which is going to just be – that's going to cause so much upheaval and anger and – vitriol towards the committee. Not that the committee gives a shit, but I can see a scenario where Bama gets in regardless. And frankly, I think the committee wants to put Bama in regardless. Obviously, they put him at two with one loss, and they had other undefeated teams that aren't obviously in the top four. Oregon, it's pretty simple. Oregon has to win out. Oregon has to win out, and Ohio State have to win out. If one of those two teams slip up at all the rest of the way, they're out, and then that opens the door for Michigan, Cincinnati, Michigan State, and Notre Dame. Oklahoma State, I don't really think has a shot. Wake Forest definitely doesn't have a shot. Honestly, Oklahoma is sitting out at 13. They possibly could, maybe, if they win the Big 12 championship. Again, a lot of scenarios obviously have to play out for Oklahoma, but that's a big drop off for them. I mean, that loss this past weekend by Oklahoma was just awful. That was the only upset, so to speak, like big upset loss over the weekend was Oklahoma. We got to talk about that for a quick second. I love Lincoln Riley. Lincoln Riley has obviously, look at all of the Heisman winners and quarterbacks that he has mentored and coached, and they're now doing quite well in the NFL. The thought process that he had, though, to sit Caleb Williams in the middle of that football game, they were only down 7. And I understand that Williams was not having a good game. But why in God's name would you sit him and put back Spencer Rattler back in the football game? Like, why would you bench Caleb Williams, who is your redshirt freshman, who has been pretty damn good for you since you inserted him into the starting lineup 4 weeks ago, has relatively been a revelation for you. He's having a little bit of a rough patch, albeit with the understanding that Oklahoma could not slip up. They had to remain undefeated in order to have a shot to make it to the playoff. But why would you put in Spencer Rattler? You benched Spencer Rattler for a reason. We've talked about Spencer Rattler on this podcast before. The kid's a bum. He's not that good. He's completely overrated. And I understand that you're looking for a juice, like a little bit of juice, like a way to get your team to rally. Your team wasn't rallying around Spencer Rattler earlier this season. Why do you think they would rally around him now? It's just a very, very odd coaching move by a really smart head coach, and arguably one of the smartest head coaches in college football. I don't understand what thought process was going through Riley's head at that moment. I thought it was really stupid, and really at that point in time, once I saw Rattler come into the game, I looked at it as, okay, so Oklahoma is giving up on the season. Because I don't know how mentally, if you're Caleb Williams, you're going to recover from, hey man, we're bringing you in now, you're now the guy, to you slip up one game. You have, after having 4 weeks of tremendous gameplay, you have one bad game, and now all of a sudden you're benched. That you've pretty much told that kid that you're not confident that he can work his way through a tough spell, which is just, to me, it's just not smart coaching. It really isn't, especially with a kid that presumably you're now going to have as your quarterback for the next 2 to 3 years. And everyone's like, oh, well, you know, you got to have mental toughness and you got to have the fortitude. It's not about mental toughness at that point in time. Your coach is telling you by benching you at that point in time for a quarterback that he had put you in, who he had benched earlier this season and put you in ahead of, that he doesn't have faith that you could find a way to work through it. That, to me, it was just terrible. Not smart move by Mr. Riley. Anyway, moving on here, we got 3 games to watch this weekend. Sorry, I went down a rabbit hole there. We got Michigan State at Ohio State, which I think Ohio State's going to win the football game. I'd love to see Michigan State pull it off. I just think Ohio State's the better football team. You have Oregon at Utah. Utah always gives Oregon fits. They've done it in the past. This would be my quote-unquote upset alert, even though it's not that much of an upset, but it would be an upset alert. Oregon, if Oregon's going to lose a game the rest of the way, this is going to be the game Oregon's going to lose. Utah has caused Oregon problems for years. I'm going to take Oregon, mainly because I would like to see a Pac-12 team in the playoffs, so I'm rooting for Oregon to win this game, but don't be shocked if Utah pulls this one out. And then there's Arkansas at Alabama, which is just a solid SEC matchup. I think Bama's going to blow out Arkansas. I don't really think it's going to be all that close. So again, you got Ohio State over Michigan State. I've got Oregon over Utah and Alabama over Arkansas, and then we'll see what happens if there's some random crazy upset over the weekend. We'll see. Maybe we'll see some change in the college football playoff next week. But as far as I'm concerned, everything, relatively speaking, is going to remain the same, at least in the top four, unless one of those four teams loses at some point this weekend. All right, NFL Week 10, here we go. Cowboys and Bears Falcons 43-3. Prescott, 296 yards, 2 touchdowns, and 1 touchdown rushing. Matt Ryan, 117 yards and 2 interceptions. Woof. Cowboys erased any doubts that they're A, anything like teams from the past who, and by teams, I'm talking about like their teams in the past, who would go on a run early in the season and then lay down come November and December. And B, they're clearly one of the best teams in football. Their offense is unbelievable. When they're on another level. There's very few teams that can keep up with that Cowboys offense. And that defense, you can't ignore how good the Cowboys defense has been. Again, we talked about it early this season, and I had said if the Cowboys defense can just be average to below average, just not historically awful, the Cowboys are going to have a shot to reach the Super Bowl. And that remains true. Now, the Cowboys beat up on a crappy Falcons team who, albeit I said last week that I think the Falcons could hang around in the football game, I took the Falcons actually in my to win the football game. I said that I think the Cowboys could upset the Cowboys, that the Falcons, this is one of those games where the Falcons could possibly get up for it. Maybe the Falcons are turning a corner. Matt Ryan seemed like he was starting to click with that offense. And then this happens. So the Falcons really aren't any good. They can't get out of their own way. They're they're just constantly tripping over their own feet. They're a dreadful football team. And by the way, that was one of Matt Ryan's worst performances of his career. It might be the worst performance of his career. It was just, it was a bloodbath the entire game. Wasn't even close. Cowboys look good. Prescott looks back to being like Prescott. Last week was clearly a fluke for this team, and they're certainly one of the top four or five best teams in football right now. Patriots trounce the Browns 45-7. Mac Jones, 198 yards and three touchdowns. Baker Mayfield, 73 yards, one touchdown, one interception. Case Keenum came in relief for him for 81 yards. Let's start off with the Patriots, then I'm going to absolutely decimate Baker Mayfield and the Browns. Jones, terrific. He's possibly going to win Offensive Player of the Year by year's end. He is clearly the best rookie quarterback. Honestly, at this point in time, and I know it's early, and I do think when it's all said and done, Trevor Lawrence is going to be one of the better quarterbacks in football. Mac Jones is making a case right now. He may be better than Trevor Lawrence when it's all said and done, which is insane to me. Maybe not insane to other people, because there's a lot of people who are very high on Mac Jones and believed that the 49ers should have taken Mac Jones number three overall in the draft. I, however, said it before and I'll say it again, couldn't have been more wrong about Jones. I thought Jones was one of the worst quarterbacks coming out of college last year, mainly because he came from Alabama and because I just didn't see anything all that special from him at Bama. That this kid has got it, whatever it is he has. And it also helps that he has the greatest coach of all time coaching him up every single week. But dude, this Patriots team is for real. They're going to make some noise in the playoffs. I'm as much as Bill Simmons drives me nuts when I listen to his podcast all the time and he talks about his Patriots. And I'm like, dude, shut up. They're not that good. They may be that good and he may be right. Now let's go to the Browns. Baker Mayfield looked awful. Absolutely awful once again. Now, he injured his knee and he was out for most of the second half. And I understand he's got a shoulder injury. I get that. But come on. I mean, the Browns looked better on offense under Case Keenum, for Christ's sakes. Like, look, guys, you can't take the Browns seriously as a Super Bowl contender at this point. All right, because they're not. They're not. That defense is not as good as it's been advertised. Their offense is as inconsistent as hell. One week they look great, the next week they're not. And here's the funny little thing. When you really go back and you look at the way Baker Mayfield plays, Baker Mayfield looks good when the Browns get a lead. So if the Browns get a lead early and they're able to just rely on their running game, Mayfield looks great. Mayfield, however, though, cannot find ways to bring his team back from the depths. He's never been able to do it. I don't know if he has more than two or three comeback wins in his career so far. He's just not that guy. He's not that guy. Now, I think what will end up happening at the end of this year is that the Browns will opt for his fifth year. They'll give him the fifth year option. And then they'll see what they have after next season. And then after next season, if it's more of this, they need to look for another quarterback in the draft. I'm not saying that Mayfield can't be a starter in the league, because he's not that bad. I'm not saying that he's not a starter. But for the Browns, for what the Browns have been able to build, they're a quarterback away from being a Super Bowl contender. And I just don't think it's Baker Mayfield. Chiefs down the Raiders 41-14. Pat Mahomes, 406 yards, five touchdowns. Derek Carr, 261 yards, two touchdowns and a pick. The Chiefs finally looked like the team that everyone expected in the preseason. Mahomes was on fire all game and looked like the Mahomes that all the sycophantic clapping seals in the media and a few of the people on this network can't stop drooling over. Kelce and Hill had great performances as well. Look, Pat Mahomes finally played well. First game of the season, he finally looked like Pat Mahomes, like the Pat Mahomes of old. He was on target. He didn't turn the ball over. He looked great. I'm not going to take anything away from Pat Mahomes. He looked awesome. It's one game though, folks. Just remember that. I understand the Chiefs are now 6-4. They're now in first place in the AFC West. I get it. Everybody is just like elated with, oh, look, the Chiefs are back. Well, we'll see. Because the Chiefs have played inferior opponents the last few weeks. They barely beat Daniel Jones and the Giants. They barely survived the Packers without Aaron Rodgers. And this week they beat a reeling Raiders team. Which, look, I've said before, I give credit to other teams. You beat the teams that are on your schedule. You beat the teams that are lesser than you. This was the first time that the Chiefs actually looked like the Chiefs, though. They blew out an opponent that they should have blown out. They should have blown out the Giants. They should have blown out the Packers last week. So this is the first time that the Chiefs' offense has actually looked good. Let's see what happens moving forward. You know, they have a big game this coming weekend. Let's see how they play against a superior opponent. If they can hang around and even win that football game, then I will come on this podcast next week and I will say, look, the Chiefs are 100% back. Mahomes is back. Now everyone can start fearing the Chiefs again in the AFC. Until I see that, until I see a little bit of consistency with this team, I'm not ready to say anything. And that now brings me to the Raiders. The Raiders are reeling. I think they're done. I don't think they're going to make the playoffs. They look like the Raiders of old. They start off strong in the beginning of every single year, and then they collapse right around this time, right around the middle of November, early December. They end up collapsing, and they throw up all over themselves. And they have had a ton of adversity to overcome this season. You lose your coach, and then you lose one of your star players after he drives drunk and murders somebody. That's a lot to overcome. That's a lot for a locker room to deal with. The performance the other night, they hung around with the Chiefs for the first half of the football game, or the first almost three quarters of the football game. If DeSean Jackson doesn't screw up, the Raiders could have made the game or continue to make the game close. And maybe we would have had a different outcome. Who knows? But at the end of the day, the Raiders weren't able to get things done. They put up a pretty pathetic performance in the second half of that game. And I don't think this team makes the playoffs. They just don't have anything going for them. Aside from Derek Carr, who I'm a Carr fan, and it sucks to see this team once again collapse all over itself. But I don't think they're going to be a playoff team. As much as they looked like they could be a true blue contender earlier this season and they had a lot going for them, I think that's too much for them to overcome, and they're just not going to be around come January. Packers shut out the Seahawks 17-0. Aaron Rodgers, 292 yards and a pick. A.J. Dillon, 66 yards, two touchdowns on the ground. Russell Wilson, 161 yards and two interceptions. Rodgers looked like he hadn't played or practiced in 2 weeks. He looked off. I mean, there's no way to shake it. He looked off. He didn't look terrible. He played well, but he looked off. The Packers defense continues to look great. Packers, I think, statistically have a top five defense. For the first time since Aaron Rodgers won the Super Bowl, this is the first Packers defense that actually looks good. They shut out Russell Wilson. For the first time in Russell Wilson's career, Russell Wilson was shut out. And for the second time in Aaron Rodgers' career, he actually has a defense. With all of this being said, there is the caveat, though, that Aaron Jones went out with a knee injury. And that could be a big deal. I mean, depending on how long he's out, that could be a big deal. It's a big deal for my fantasy team, I can tell you that. But that's not important. For the Packers as a whole, losing Aaron Jones for a significant amount of time could be a problem. Now, if he's able to come back by the playoffs, they'll be fine. I mean, it won't be a big deal. But if they don't have him for the postseason, that could be a problem for them. Oh, and quick note, Packers are the number one seed in the NFC. Just wanted to point that out there. You know, Aaron Rodgers, once again, sitting on top of the NFC. I just like to point that out from time to time. Anyway, moving on to the Seahawks here. Russell Wilson does not look healthy. I don't know if the Seahawks rushed him back. I don't know if Russell Wilson was lying about how healthy his hand was. He looked terrible. It was not good. Russell Wilson's never been shut out in his career. I've never seen Russell Wilson miss deep throws like he was missing. He was overthrowing. He was underthrowing. He had no rapport with the receivers. The Seahawks as a whole, they're done. Their season's over. I said preseason they would be the worst team in the NFC West. They are the worst team in the NFC West. Even if Russell Wilson had been healthy, I still believe the Seahawks were going to be the worst team in the NFC West. There was nothing to like about this football team. I think they're poorly coached. Their defense isn't that great. They do have some offensive talent. Not arguing against their wide receiver talent. But it's just not there for them. And honestly, I don't think Russell Wilson comes back. I think he finds a new team come this offseason. He's going to be hunting. Where he ends up, I have no idea. Could be in New York. Maybe the Jets will make a play for him. He wants to go to a big market. So you got New York. You have Chicago. I know everyone loves Justin Fields, but they would trade Justin Fields in a heartbeat in Chicago to get Russell Wilson. The Raiders are obviously an option. And then you have Denver. I know they're not a big market, but still, you have Denver and you have Pittsburgh. Both of those teams, and maybe even Philly. You have opportunities in certain locales where you could see Russell Wilson next season. All right, so other news and notes around the league. The 49ers stunned the Rams on Monday Night Football 31-10. Stafford, 243 yards, 1 touchdown, 2 picks. Jimmy G, 182 yards and 2 touchdowns. Shanahan finally won a big game, and the 49ers finally won at home after losing 8 straight at Levi Stadium. Kudos to the Niners for not laying down on their season. This season's been tough. Once again, it's been injury-riddled. You know, hey, I've been down on Shanahan. I've talked about it before. I think he's overrated. I'm happy to see them actually show up for a game. This was a big win. I mean, it's a big division game. And the 49ers showed up. Do I think the 49ers should make it in the playoffs? No, I do not. But they are going to be a tough out for anyone trying to make a playoff push. They're not going to be an easy laydown. So good for the 49ers for actually having a spine and a little bit of guts and a little bit of heart. It's nice to see. The prolific Rams defense have looked awful the last 2 weeks. They gave up 28 to the Titans and 31 this week against the 49ers. The Rams' bye week might be their saving grace right now at this point in time. This will give them a chance to lick their wounds and make the necessary adjustments that they need to for the second half on the way to the Super Bowl, which I still think the Rams are the team to beat in the NFC. I know the Packers are the number one seed. I know, and I'm very happy about that. But when it's all said and done, I think the Packers and the Rams are the two best teams in the NFC, and I think the Rams are the team to beat. I still believe that. However, also notice how as soon as Odell Beckham Jr. was part of their team, the Rams suffered their worst loss of the season. Y'all notice that? I warned everybody. I warned as soon as I found out that OBJ was going to the Rams, I warned everybody. I said, this could end the Rams season. I'm not saying it's related. I'm just pointing out that it's a bit coincidental that as soon as Odell Beckham Jr. becomes part of the Rams get absolutely shellacked by a pretty bad 49ers football team. You know, you guys can say what you want. I'm just going to wear my tinfoil hat right now about that and just point out the fact that every team that Odell Beckham seems to go to, the team ends up being worse off than they were before he got there. But, hey, what do I know? I just watch football and read notes and stats and stuff. So, whatever. Anyway, the Washington football team stuns the Buccaneers 29-19. Brady threw 2 picks and looked old for the second game in a row. The Bucs look woefully unprepared against a crappy team after coming off a bye week. For those in the media who are making excuses for Brady, there are plenty of them out there over his poor performance because he doesn't have Antonio Brown or Gronk. Shut up. He still has Evans, Godwin, and Johnson. Okay, so I don't want to hear all the excuses. Oh, Brady's a creature of habit. He creates these bonds with these wide receivers, and he's all about timing and blah, 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 blah. Look. He's got two of the best wide receivers in football in Godwin and Evans. I understand he's missing Gronk, who's his safety blanket, and he's missing Antonio Brown. But Brady has done a lot more with a lot less in the past. So either Brady can do a lot more with a lot less, or Brady needs talent around him. You can't have it both ways. All right. And I am not a Brady hater. I used to be. I haven't been for a long time. But all of the all y'all out there who are trying to make excuses for Brady and why he's played like crap, the dude's almost 50 years old. He's going to start falling apart. I'm not saying he's falling apart, but he's going to have bad games. And, you know, this might be the very, very beginning of the end. That's all I'm saying. I'm just pointing out the fact that for the past 2 weeks, or the past 3 weeks, rather, the last two games, he hasn't looked good. Vikings take down the Chargers 27-20. Kirk Cousins, 294 yards and 2 touchdowns. Justin Herbert, 195 yards, 1 touchdown and 1 pick. Cousins and the Vikings offense played well all game long. They didn't squander their early lead. They won a must-win game to keep their season alive against a pretty good Chargers team. With that being said, Herbert had another stinker. This is the last two out of the last three games. Herbert has not played great. After the start of the season where he was on fire, he has cooled off as of late. The offense looks flat. Mike Williams, who was a revelation early this season, can't seem to get open. And the Chargers have some work to do. They haven't looked great the last few weeks. There's no getting around it. They had a lead in the AFC West, which has now been squandered, as we said. The Chiefs are now at the top of the division. I still think the Chargers will make the playoffs as a wild card team. They may even win the division. They still have another game against the Chiefs. So the Chargers kind of control their own destiny here, as far as I'm concerned. I think they have a easier schedule than the Chiefs moving forward. Chargers still have a chance to win the division. I'm not saying they're going to, but they have an opportunity. It all falls on them, though. It all falls on them. The Titans continue to roll as they beat the Saints 23-21. Two-game win streak for the Titans without Derrick Henry. Tannehill, 213 yards and a touchdown. The Titans are still the number one seed in the AFC. I can't believe it either. The Saints are not going to win too many games with Simeon at quarterback. Trevor Siemian sucks. I still don't understand why Sean Payton didn't actually go out and find a real backup quarterback this offseason, but yeah, they'd be better off with Taysom Hill. Put Taysom Hill in. Simeon's just terrible. Finally, Cam Newton returned to Carolina to help lead the team over the first-place Cardinals 34-10. Newton threw for a touchdown and rushed for a touchdown. Look, man, Newton's a feel-good story. All right, I've never been a Cam Newton fan. I am a fan of the new age Cam Newton, the dude who was kind of down on his luck, went to New England, had to struggle for a bit, then got bumped out of the league because nobody wanted him. Now I think he actually appreciates where he is. I think he took a lot of what he had, a lot of his skills for granted years ago when he was in Carolina, when he was an MVP candidate, when he went to a Super Bowl. I think he took all of that for granted. I think the what's taken place over the last few years has really humbled him. And I think he appreciates where he is now. The Cardinals are still without Murray. They're still without Hopkins. Look, you can't expect the Cardinals to continue to win football games without Kyler Murray or DeAndre Hopkins. Or J.J. Watt, for that matter. But I think J.J. Watt's lost for the season. That's a whole other issue. But you can't expect them to lose their top wide receiver and their quarterback, their starting quarterback, and continue to win. Cliff Kingsbury, for me, is still the coach of the year. The Cardinals are still a good football team. And, you know, realistically speaking, they can lose another football game. I mean, I personally don't think you're going to see Kyler Murray until 2 weeks from now. They have one more game this weekend. Then they're going to hit their bye week. I think Murray stays out until after the bye. I also think that's the smart play. Oh, and this is the last thing to note. Lions and Steelers ended in a tie. Both teams are pathetic. That's all that needs to be said about that. I was 1-3 again last week. I am sub 500 on the season. It is not looking good, but I feel really good about this week's 11 picks. Here we go. Four games to watch: Packers at Vikings, Cowboys at Chiefs, Bengals at Raiders, and Giants at the Buccaneers. Take the Packers. They're a 2.5-point favorite on the road against Minnesota. Packers are a better football team. Take Green Bay. Cowboys are a 2.5-point dog at Kansas City. Take the Cowboys. Take the Cowboys. Look, man. Like I said before, I'm still not buying the Chiefs. The Chiefs have to prove that they can play and hang with a much better football team in Dallas. I think the Cowboys are a better football team. I don't think they're the better coach football team, but I think they're the overall better football team. Prescott has had a much better season this year than Pat Mahomes. And I think the Cowboys' defense is much better than people are giving it credit for. I like the Cowboys to win this game outright. So I would take the Cowboys, the 2.5 points at Kansas City. Bengals at Raiders, take the Bengals. The Bengals are only a 1-point favorite. I know the Bengals have been free-falling, as have the Raiders. The Raiders are reeling right now. I think the Bengals are the better football team. I think the Bengals have – I think Burrow's a better quarterback than Carr. I think they're the better coach team. And I just think – and the Bengals also realize, if they're smart, they realize they have to win this football game. They have an opportunity to still make the playoffs. That no one apparently wants to win the AFC North. So they have just as good of a chance as the Ravens right now to win that division or even slip into a wild card spot. So the Bengals, I think, understand where they are in the season, and I would definitely take the Bengals. Finally, the Giants are an 11-point dog at the Bucs. Take the Giants plus 11. I'm not saying the Giants are going to win this football game, but there's nothing that I've seen from the Buccaneers the last 2 weeks to make, or the last two games that they've played, to make me feel confident at all that they can blow out anybody. That defense is leaking like a sieve. And Tom Brady looks old, man. He's looking old. So look, this could be the game that you know, Brady just throws for 6 touchdowns and absolutely decimates the Giants. But I also like this Giants football team. So, again, I'm going to take the Giants plus 11. So, to recap real quick, Packers minus 2.5, Cowboys plus 2.5, Bengals minus 1, and Giants plus 11. Those are your picks for week 11. There are very few things that'll get me to talk about baseball right now. It's football season. It's college football. We have just started college basketball. We're in the midst of the NBA season, except for when somebody says something really, really stupid. Carlos Correa, who was the shortstop, who's been the shortstop for the Houston Astros for 7 years, who's now a free agent with rumors of him going to places such as the Rangers, the Tigers. There were rumors about him going to the Yankees. That's dead and buried now, as well as in other places. Came out and said, after fresh off of his Gold Glove Award, his first Gold Glove Award, by the way, quote, Derek Jeter never deserved any of the Gold Gloves that he won, end quote. Now, caveat. Did Jeter have limited range later on in his career at shortstop? Yes, he did. Were there rumors that Brian Cashman was trying to move Derek Jeter to center field later in his career? Those rumors were very true. Cashman was trying to move Jeter to center field. Jeter said no. And frankly, I would have kept Jeter at shortstop too, because as you've seen over the last few years, it's not like the Yankees have been crushing it at shortstop without Derek Jeter. They had a little bit of time with Didi. Didi was okay, but he was not Derek Jeter. So there's that. Anyway, moving forward here. For all you people out there, for all you young bucks, because this thing was posted on Barstool, I went through the comments. All of you youngings out there who made comments like Derek Jeter is the most overrated player of his generation. Derek Jeter sucked. Derek Jeter wouldn't have been good if he wasn't a Yankee. You guys are stupid. You're ignorant. And you sound unbelievably unintelligent when it comes to baseball history. Okay? It's just, for those who have grown up in my era, who are my age, know how good Jeter was. You can say a lot of things about a lot of different players. The one thing you cannot say is you cannot say that Derek Jeter was not one of the best shortstops of all time. Did he have limited range compared to his competition? In some instances, yes. In some instances, he didn't. He was a pretty damn good defensive shortstop in his heyday when he was younger. As he got older, was his range limited? Yeah, because he was older. He didn't have the arm strength that he used to have. He wasn't as fast or as quick as he used to be. But the guy won 5 Gold Gloves. You cannot tell me that he did not deserve any of them. That doesn't even make any sense. So we're going to go over the resumes of Derek Jeter and Carlos Correa, just because I think it'll be fun. So we look at Jeter's resume. Jeter was in the league for 20 years, 14-time All-Star, five-time Gold Glove winner, which I just said, 5-time World Series championships. It's important to note that none of his championships came from cheating. I just thought I'd point that out. He was a World Series MVP, AL Rookie of the Year, lifetime 310 hitter, and he accumulated 3,465 hits. Now we go to Carlos Correa's resume. He's a 7-year veteran. He was also Rookie of the Year. He's only a 2-time All-Star. Interesting. So Jeter was 14 to Correa's 2. He's been in the league for 7 years. Jeter was... Anyway, just pointing that out there. He's accumulated 1 Gold Glove Award in his 7-year career. He has one World Series championship, all while cheating the game. And so far, he's a lifetime 277 hitter. Now, when we look at the competition that both players had when it came to receiving their Gold Gloves, Jeter was against players like Nomar Garcia-Parra, one of the better defensive shortstops in his time, Alex Rodriguez, one of the greatest baseball players of all time, and Omar Vizquel, who again was considered one of the greatest defensive shortstops we've ever seen. Carlos Correa's competition, J.P. Crawford, Anderton Simmons, and Tim Anderson. Yeah, I know. I know you guys are scratching. You guys are sitting back and you're just blown away by the stiff competition that Carlos Correa has had as far as defensive shortstops go and receiving Gold Gloves. So Carlos Correa can go suck an egg, all right? And all the people out there who were defending Carlos Correa, there's nothing that I can't stand more than ignorance when it comes to any type of argument with sports. There are facts. There are plenty of places you can go for statistics. There's plenty of places you can go for analysis. And I understand that a lot of you youngings out there who believe ignorant things like LeBron James is the greatest basketball player of all time don't understand that you can just go on YouTube and pull up clips of Michael Jordan or Kareem Abdul-Jabbar or Larry Bird, Magic Johnson, you know, players that actually understood what it meant to take contact and still, you know, not cry on the court and miss free throws in clutch moments. Though, you know, I understand those are difficult concepts for you to wrap your very puny, small, and ignorant brains around. But Derek Jeter was one of the greatest baseball players of all time. He's a first ballot Hall of Famer. For Carlos Correa to sit there and say Jeter did not deserve a single one of his gold gloves is just one. It's just such a dumb and asinine comment to make. It sounds, it reeks of jealousy. And look, I would be jealous too if I saw a guy who was way more successful in his career than I have been in mine, who actually understood what it took to be a winner, to win World Series, to win World Series MVP, to not cheat the game in order to win. I would be jealous of that too. The fact that once again, it was proven this past World Series that the only way that me and my team could ever win a championship is by cheating the game. I would have a tough time swallowing that pill too. The realization, the understanding that I'm always going to be looked at as a cheater, which he is. I'm always going to be looked at somebody less than all of the great shortstops that came before me, which he is. He is. He's less than. And making a comment like this proves that he's less than all of the greats that came before him and all the greats that are going to come after him. As we enter into the holiday season, I think it's fun to just kind of sit back and think about people's traditions and how this is a very comforting time of year, I think, for a lot of people. You know, you see your family, you see your friends. This is the joyous time of year. Everyone loves this time of year. I believe that from Thanksgiving till New Year's, there's magic in the air. It's just, you can feel it. You can sense it. People are friendlier, which is saying something in New England, because usually in New England, everybody's just crabby at each other. It's a different aura that surrounds this time of year. For me, the tradition that I have held on to as hard as I possibly could and just continue to grab it and embrace it is our Turkey Day football or our Thanksgiving Day football game, in which friends and I get together and we play a game for about a couple hours every Thanksgiving morning, and we have some beers sometimes we have some shots, we bring donuts, and we just hang out with each other for a few hours. And this was something we started over a decade ago. And as we got older, as we got married, had kids, we realized as time was moving on that, you know, we can't get together like we used to. And so it was so important to keep the Thanksgiving football game alive, because that was our one guarantee that we would all get together. And specifically the OG five, which is myself, Rich, Matt, Landon, and Adams. And I've mentioned these guys before on this podcast. If you listen to Richo and Lala, you know Rich, you know Matt. They've come on. They've both been on this podcast as well. Landon and Adams have not. They're not interested in doing that kind of stuff, which is totally fine. But the five of us have been friends since high school. And we've added other people to the football mix, which includes Dan, who's obviously a member of the network, as well as a few other people. And my dad has always played as well. It's just been a tradition that we've held on to for so long. And last year, thanks COVID, was the first year that we hadn't done it in over a decade. And so this year, more so than I think any year before, I am really, really excited to get back out there and just play some football and see everybody and just be together. Unfortunately, this year, Richo won't be there because he moved down to Virginia. And it just logistically just doesn't make sense for him to come up this year. So that part sucks, and we will miss him. But I'm also happy for him because he's down there. He's with his boys. He's going to be able to celebrate the holiday with his family, which is what the holidays are all about, is being with your family. And while, yes, do I consider him family? Yes, he is my family too, but he's with his immediate family. And again, that's what it's all about. But I am still very excited to get together and to see the guys and to just be around everybody again. It's been a tough year for everybody. Or tough 2 years, I should say, practically, for everybody. And to have the opportunity and the ability to still get together with the guys, even after the year hiatus that we have, I think it speaks to how special that tradition is, not just for me, but for them. The fact that they are looking forward to it as much as I am, I think means more to me than anything else. Because for a long time, I used to think I was driving them crazy. I still think I drive them crazy. Actually, I know I drive them crazy. Because I've always harped on the importance of us getting together and making time for our friendship. You know, you got to make time for your relationships, right? They talk about it all the time. When you're in a marriage, it's work. It's not just, you know, roses and sunshines and unicorns. It takes work. Like, you have to work at your marriage. Well, you have to work at your friendships too. You have to make time for each other, whether it's a phone call, a text message, a meetup every now and then to go grab a beer or grab dinner or something and just catch up. You know, it takes work. And I've always been the one who's been banging on the door, being like, hey, we got to get together. We need to get together. We need to see each other. We need to keep rekindling that flame of our friendship alive, because I don't want to see it die. And the fact that they feel that it's just as important as I do that we keep this tradition, even if we don't see each other throughout the year, if this is the only day a year that we all get together, the fact that they're just as involved and just as excited about it as I am, that speaks to the magic that I was talking about earlier this segment. The getting together with friends and family and just being around each other, the love and the bond that you have with those special individuals in your life. To bring it full circle, that's what makes the holiday season so damn special. And with that being said, since this is the last episode prior to Thanksgiving, I just want to wish you all a very happy and healthy Thanksgiving. And I'm extremely thankful for all of you out there who have listened to this podcast, who have continued to support this podcast over the years. You don't know how much it means to me. And I just want you to know that I really do appreciate each and every one of you. All right, everybody, that's going to be it for this week's edition of the LaValley Sports Talk Podcast, brought to you by the Silent Network. As always, thank you so much for tuning and listening. I greatly appreciate it. Please subscribe, rate, and review wherever you get your podcasts. And that's it. That's all I have for you this week. Hope you all be well. Stay safe. Have a very happy Thanksgiving. And I'll talk to you all again next week.